everybody, and welcome to the Wintrust to Business Lunch. This is Ji Suk Yee. Hope you had a fantastic Christmas if you celebrate Christmas. And if you don't celebrate Christmas, you're still celebrating the awesome money news that Big O just mentioned. The NASDAQ hits 9,000 for the first time. S&P 500 reaches all-time high and year-end rally. So great news all around, along with the great weather as well. So you know what? Happy Thursday, everybody. And I'm excited about the show we've got for you today. Later on, we have Dennis Rodkin. Of course, he is the reporter on residential real estate from Cranes, and he writes extensively about the area's housing market. So he's going to have a lot of information for us in the second half of the show. But I'm going to start off the show today with Katie Deutschel. Katie is part of this incredible company, co-founder of a woman-led tech company that helps with fertility needs by not only providing the financial resources needed, but also the educational and emotional support that most companies, you know, they just cover the financing, but they're doing it all. So I think that's pretty amazing. And this is a topic that's near and dear to my heart, especially as a woman, and a lot of my friends going through fertility treatment. And this is a very important issue. And I think, like many local businesses, you thought about it and started the business because you had a personal experience with it. Right, Katie?
I did.
Can you tell us a little bit about your journey? How did this even get on your radar?
Yeah. So when I was 35 years old, I wasn't married, but I knew I always wanted to have children. So I had heard a little bit about egg freezing and decided to take the step to get some testing done to see what my actual fertility age was. Did the testing. My numbers weren't where they should really be for a 35 turning 36 year old female. So I decided to take that leap and freeze my eggs to preserve my fertility.
Now, this is a scenario that many women find themselves in. Of course, women in the workforce in droves, also getting continuing education. You ended up going to law school. So obviously you were focused on your career, and then all of a sudden you take a test and you realize, oh my goodness, this is a part of my life, honestly, that men don't have to think about when they're pursuing their careers or their higher education, but we do. And you decided at that point, okay, what am I going to do?
Right. As women, we always hear that infamous line, your biological clock is ticking.
Right.
So,
and you don't think about it until you hit your mid-30s.
Exactly.
And then you're like, oh, wait a minute. I don't have anyone to have babies with yet. So, but I also need money if I'm going to freeze eggs.
Exactly. So I went ahead and I froze my eggs at 36. After that, I started speaking to with local fertility clinics and local nonprofits just about the egg freezing process. And one of the questions that would always come up was, how much is it? How am I going to be able to afford this?
Because how much does it cost? It's very expensive.
It's very expensive. Just to even freeze your eggs is about $7,500. And then on top of that, the medication could be anywhere from $3,500 to $5,000.
And because I've had so many friends do this, I know that there is also, you have to pay yearly or monthly to keep the eggs preserved and frozen.
Right. So then you have to pay the cost to freeze the eggs, and then you have to pay the storage fee, and then you have a yearly storage fee every year until you use them, or maybe you don't use them.
You got to keep them on ice. You
exactly.
Got to keep them preserved.
Got to pay the rent.
I know. Wow. So these are things, I know, if anyone's listening, that, you know, you have a young woman in your life that's in her early 30s, even. This is something, if you have a granddaughter or a daughter, this is something that I think this is a company you should know about. And it is also local and homegrown. We're going to have a lot more with Katie from Embarro in just a little bit. But right now, let's check in with Ryan Burrow with a check on the weather and the markets. We're back on the Wintrust Business Lunch. I'm so excited to have Miss Katie Deutschel here from Embarro. And Katie, if you can fill folks in on what Embarro stands for.
Yeah, so Embarro is basically just a play off of the word embryo.
And you guys give low financing for folks, families, really. I'm assuming that this is for married folks. This is a decision they have to make with their partner.
Right. So it's for fertility preservation. So egg freezing that we're hearing now so much about for not only women, but also couples, whether they're going to go through IVF, whether they're going to do insemination, whether women are going to need a donor egg as well.
6.1 million women in the U.S. Seek fertility assistance, and it says that the Centers of Disease Control and Prevention has determined that 12% of women have difficulty getting pregnant or carrying a pregnancy to term. This was something that was very close to your heart. You spent a lot of time continuing and furthering your education and career, and then you decided to freeze your eggs. And then you realized throughout that process that it wasn't an easy experience for you.
No, so I actually ended up doing 3 rounds of egg freezing, and you don't really know when you start the process what it really involves. Like, we hear about IVF and we hear about egg freezing, but we don't really understand all that's involved in it, with taking the medication, doing the monitoring, having the eggs extracted. So these are things that Embaro wants to help educate women and couples about. What are you going to actually feel like when you're injecting these hormones? Because there's a lot of hormones that you're injecting into your body.
So not only are you doing the financial, but that is the emotional support and the educational support that you're also providing. A lot of resources too, you said, from the holistic to doctors that you guys have at your disposal.
Yeah, so we have doctors that can give advice on IVF, egg freezing. Obviously, they can't give a lot of medical advice unless they're your patient, but just the general background information as to what goes into egg freezing or what goes into IVF.
How much does this cost normally?
So egg freezing is about $7,500 just for the freezing. If you're going to do an IVF cycle, then it goes up to about $11,500 because that involves fertilizing the eggs, transferring the embryo, and then the medication on top of that is about $3,500 to $5,000.
And doctors tend to want you to go through multiple rounds.
Yeah, so it's going to depend on your age. It's going to depend on a lot of the testing that's done prior to going through egg freezing or going through IVF. So for myself, my numbers, as I said, weren't where a normal 35, 36-year-old should be. So I actually ended up doing 3 rounds of egg freezing to freeze 25 eggs.
So I would think the average is a lot higher than $7,500 that people are spending.
Yeah, most people have to go through probably at least 2 rounds.
Okay, so in the tens of thousands of dollars.
Exactly.
And this is something that is an emotional decision. I think it's something that, it's sad that it has to be a financial decision, but it's something that you do have to think about earlier on. And then you're making it possible for women to make this choice.
Right. So as I said, after I froze my eggs, I will talk to women that were interested in the egg freezing process. And again, the cost would come up. And just to see their faces when they find out how much it is, it's just very disheartening to see them say, well, I don't think I can go forward because how am I going to be able to afford this? Because it is a lot of money.
And then Embaro provides low interest. Can you give us a roundabout of the interest rate and also how long the term is for women to pay off the loan?
Absolutely. So our rates range from 6.99 to 14.99, which is much, much less than having to be able to put that or to have to put that on a credit card. And the terms you can choose from anywhere from 12 months to 60 months.
Okay. So the terms are nice, long differential of time there as well.
Exactly. We don't have any application fees or any penalty for prepayment as well.
So you're local. You grew up in Bloomingdale. You were educated as well in Chicagoland area. You have your law degree. When you proposed this idea as a business concept, did you have a lot of difficulty finding takers, or were people thinking, wow, this is a great business idea? This is something that needs to exist.
Most of the doctors that I've actually talked to think it's a fantastic idea because they see that a lot of women especially are concentrating on education, pursuing careers. Sometimes it takes a little bit longer to find a partner. So they think it's a fantastic idea because a lot of women may not be able to pull from a savings account and take $15,000 to go and freeze their eggs, but they're going to be able to afford a monthly payment.
Well, I think that's fantastic. What are some of the great stories that you have experienced through Embaro?
Meeting just other women that are going through the same thing. I mean, going through IVF is not an easy process. It's trying to have a child. There's a lot of disappointments. There's a lot of highs. There's a lot of lows. And sometimes just talking to your family and friends who have not gone through the process, they may not know what you're experiencing, how you're feeling emotionally, what you're actually going through. But to meet the other women and connect with them on an emotional level and to get that support because they understand what you're going through, there's no price tag on that.
And as a business model, this is a successful business.
Yes, we are still a startup company right now, but we know that we are a successful company because not only do we provide the financial support, we're also providing that education and support that women and couples need.
And this is definitely fulfilling a need because so many times health insurance does not cover freezing of eggs unless there's some sort of other issue. I know that I've had several friends with breast cancer that have then had the ability to have insurance cover freezing of the eggs, but if you don't have some sort of imminent medical issue of that sort, insurance doesn't cover this procedure.
A lot of times insurance won't because they consider it an elective procedure, so it's not medically necessary most of the time, but there are exceptions, like you said, to be able to cover that.
If you're listening right now and you have a young woman in your life, whether she's, I mean, when do you think people should start thinking about this in their...
So probably their late 20s, early 30s. I mean, if I can just add on, like right now, I'm going to have to use my frozen eggs because my husband and I have been going through IVF trying not to use those eggs. And unfortunately, we haven't been successful. So had I not frozen my eggs,
you wouldn't have had that to fall back
exactly,
on.
Exactly. Exactly. So now I'm my own donor.
Oh, that makes so much sense.
Yeah.
And what I do appreciate about that this has come to the forefront, especially for women, I've noticed that a lot more of my friends are talking about fertility. They're talking about freezing eggs. They're talking about miscarriages. They're talking about the difficulty because for a very long time, it's been a very taboo subject.
It has been. I mean, unfortunately, I'm very open about my journey. We went through a miscarriage as well. And just to tell people that they're not alone, that there's other people that have experienced this, that's a big part of what Embaro is.
Of course, you have to think about finances when you're thinking about children and whether you can grow your family. But really, just it shouldn't be about finances, though, if you want to bring a child into this world and you want to be a wonderful parent and take care of this child and bring the child, you know, with love and with as many resources as you have possible. Just to start off with, I think you're doing such a fantastic incredible. You're giving people a gift, you know, that they probably wouldn't be able to access otherwise.
And that's exactly what we're all about. Nobody should be turned away from wanting their dream of having a child just because they can't take that big chunk of change and afford it.
And where can people find more information, especially if they're listening right now? And like Katie said, if you have a young woman in your life, whether she's a granddaughter or a daughter, maybe, you know, put Embaro on her radar. These are things that women, I think, should start thinking about in their late 20s.
You can come visit our website. It's embaro.com, EmborrOW.com. You can also follow us on Facebook and Instagram as well.
Well, Katie, we are sending you positive thoughts.
Thank you.
Along with your journey. And we love the fact that you have created this fantastic local company that can help so many women and families right now. So we appreciate you being here. This is Katie Deutschel with Embaro. Thanks so much, Katie.
Thank you.
Right now, it's time for the Chicago Inno Minute.
Hi, this is Jim Dahlke, senior editor at Chicago Inno, with today's Inno Minute on WGN Radio, a rundown of all the Chicago innovation and tech news you need to know.
Today, you can rent someone else's car, their home, and even their clothes, as sharing economy apps allow us to rent items easier than ever. And now, a Chicago startup wants to make it easier to share motorcycles, too. Twisted Road, a Chicago startup founded in 2017, has built an online platform to find and rent personally owned motorbikes. The platform has more than 2,500 bikes available for rent across the U.S. To list a motorcycle for rent on Twisted Road, owners have to go through an approval process that includes a background check. Renters go through a similar process and must have a motorcycle license. Owners set their own daily rates, which range from $40 a day to $500, and Twisted Road keeps 30% of each transaction. The startup currently employs 4 people and sees about 50 new bikes added to the platform every week.
That's today's Inno Minute from WGN Radio. To learn more, head to chicagoinno.com and sign up for The Beat, our daily email newsletter.
Crane Chicago's Dennis Rodkin is coming up. He is the reporter on residential real estate. You guys know him well, and he writes extensively about the area's housing market. And he's going to be telling us about 7 Chicago neighborhoods with record home sale prices in 2019. So if you're thinking about buying, maybe you should stay tuned so that you can find out which neighborhoods, he said, had record home sale prices in 2019. And that is Dennis Rodkin coming up right after the break. Also, wanted to tell you guys about this cool story. Bill Gates played Secret Santa for a lucky person on the internet. A Michigan woman named Shelby received an 81-pound Secret Santa package from billionaire Bill Gates. Gates has been participating in the annual Secret Santa gift exchange on Reddit for years and makes a point to find thoughtful gifts for each recipient. And some of the gifts include candy and cat toys for Shelby's cat, Emmy. Right now, it's time for the WGN News. Hey, Dennis, how are you? Dennis Rodkin here from Cranes in Studio on the Winter's Business Lunch. We're going to be talking about all the stories that you've covered in 2019. You think that's possible to do?
Oh, sure. How much time do you have?
Well, we'll talk about some of the stories that you feel were the most important and also what you're ending the year with, rounding out your real estate stories on Cranes. So should we get started?
Sure.
Yeah? Did you have a good holiday?
I did. I'm having it now.
Oh,
I
wow.
I mean, you know, we're everybody's sort of half-time, part-time through next week. You
nice.
Know, you're sort of working
yes.
and not working.
So is it a little bit slower for you now?
Well, for me or for the real estate market, for the latter, oh, yeah.
Yeah, but for you, no, not yeah, so
no.
much.
What? No, you know, a lot of what I do in December and January, or in December is gear up for January. There's so much year-end data that comes out. I do this list of the top sales of the year, mm-hmm. and really, I'm kind of ready for that, although there may be some more sales at the $4 million level between now and Monday. So mostly sort of getting ready to do the early 2020 look at all the data from 2019.
Well, I'm fascinated about this list. I'm ready to start wherever you want to start. So,
well, should we talk about the past decade, the decade ending Tuesday,
yes.
ending the 2010s, although, of course, some people say that it doesn't actually end till a year later. Home values in Chicago, as measured by the Case-Shiller Index, went up less than nearly every other major metro in America. And I can only say nearly every other because this is Case-Shiller data, and Case-Shiller doesn't cover Houston and Philadelphia. So I don't know how their prices went, but our prices went up a total of about 10% in the course of that decade. In the top 10, in the 10 largest cities, there are five whose home values went up at least 50%. There are several that went up over 70%.
Wow.
And in San Francisco, home values went up 99% in the same period that ours went up 10.
I don't know how anyone even affords to live in San Francisco. I have friends that live there, and they told me what they pay in rent for
yeah.
just, I mean, not
yeah.
talking buying, but just in rent, what they pay for just a one bedroom is astronomical.
Well, you know what was interesting about that, G, is when I was putting together this list, I'm a reporter. I had to talk to a couple of economists about, well, how does this make you feel? And they emphasize the idea that Chicago remains among big cities one of the most affordable cities to get into if you're a first-time buyer or if you're a move-up buyer. And that is true. Our home values have moved so little in the course of a decade that you can essentially afford as much house now as you could 10 years ago. That is not true in San Francisco, where prices nearly doubled, etc. And that is true. We are more affordable if you're a buyer. However, if you're an existing homeowner, your household wealth has barely grown. And if you're an existing homeowner looking to move, we still have the largest proportion of homeowners who are underwater on their mortgage. In other cities, that number is nearly gone, or that problem is nearly gone. But our home values have recovered so little that a lot of people who bought before 2006, when everything went down, still owe more on the mortgage than the house is worth, even with the recovery we've had. So they can't afford the move up.
Oh.
So even though it's a great time to move, mm-hmm. they may have to show up at a sale table with cash, which makes it very hard to ponder moving to the next higher house.
So why is it that Chicago has relatively stayed the same?
You know what's funny, G? I saw on that Facebook memories function today that on this date 7 years ago, mm-hmm. I was doing a radio segment on why Chicago. So it's
Is it Groundhog's Day for you?
Exactly. It's 7 years later, still saying the same things. We had a very high wave of foreclosures compared to other cities, and it took a long time for those to some of them still are processing. We were very, very slow to recover on employment. We were extremely slow to cover on black employment or black unemployment to turn back into black employment. We had at 1.3 times the national rate of unemployed black people. And both of those figures, overall employment and black employment, were very slow to climb here. We've had population loss. Mm-hmm. And one of the factors that people are saying is really big right now in the past year is our property taxes have gone up and we don't know where they're going. Everybody has a pretty strong feeling that property taxes will continue to climb because Chicago and Illinois have some financial overhangs they need to deal with.
Huge financial issues.
Huge, yeah. And so what I don't know is how high will my property tax bill go? And in any market, stock market, you know this, in any market, uncertainty is the enemy. And our future, our housing market is suffering from that uncertainty. I don't know how much property taxes will change how much I can spend on housing. So in many cases, I'm just not going to commit to buying. And so that has slowed things down. It has also made me bid less on a house. If you're asking a certain amount, I'm going to subtract from that some of that future tax growth. So we started the decade with foreclosures, black unemployment, that sort of thing. We're ending the decade still with some of those problems, but with the new one, the uncertainty about property taxes.
Well, we're going to have a lot more with Crane's Dennis Rodkin, real estate expert and guru, I think. So a lot more with him coming up. But right now, it is time for the Wintrust to Business Minute.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. Governor J.B. Pritzker spent roughly $3 million of his own dollars for public expenses during his first year in office. The billionaire has made direct payments on everything from boosting pay for his top aides to renovating state buildings. The practice raises concerns about transparency because some of the private expenses are not subject to open records laws. Illinois will get over $40 million in federal funding for early childhood programs over the next 3 years. The state will get $13.4 million a year through 2022 to build programs and expand preschool programs for low-income and moderate-income families. Nearly 12,000 Chicago motorists had about $11.5 million of outstanding tickets forgiven, those for not having city stickers. The amnesty program aimed to fix what the mayor said was an unfair system of fines and fees that's toughest on the city's poorest residents. I'm James Sears, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
Here with Crane Chicago, Dennis Rodkin, real estate expert and journalist. And did you just tell me how many years has it been that you've been covering real estate here in Chicagoland area?
28. Yeah.
Well, that doesn't seem possible because you look like you've been aging in reverse a little bit.
Oh, come on.
Yes, you do.
Thank you very much for that late Christmas gift, but come on, Jay.
Not an easy biz. You have a nickname in the newsroom, you said.
Dr. Doom.
This is not good for people that are investing in real estate, right?
Well, it depends on what your goals are in investing in real estate. Of course, investors are generally looking, I mean, in the simplest form, to buy low and sell high, but to buy and hold. And for long-term investors, which is not really the realm I cover, but for long-term investors, I think you can do quite well. My coverage is primarily about homeownership. And one of my concerns is that a very large proportion of our homeownership population in the Chicago area have suffered over the course of the last 13
yes.
years since the housing downturn. Some, I don't want to say deserved to suffer, but some, it's almost like they had it coming because they dug too deep. They were too optimistic. I'm going to ask, you know, $5 million for my $800,000 house, that sort of thing. But many people had, looking back over two generations, they had seen that generally your home value increases. Whether you should count on that is a separate issue. Whether you should count on that is a separate issue. But they did count on that because for two generations, really from World War II forward until about 2006, in general, that was something you could count on. The people who are being the hardest hit now, still 13 years after the bust, are those baby boomers who built the big suburban dream house. You know, I grew up, wherever I grew up, I wanted, you know, the two-story foyer and the big curving staircase.
The American dream.
Exactly, which was a sort of a solid thing to dream of in the 90s and early 2000s. But what we're finding, I don't know if you've seen this, but on Twitter I do something called This House Sold for Less Than. What we're finding is that a lot of those people end up letting go of that house at a dramatically reduced price, selling in 2019 for 1990s prices. And so a lot of people say on Twitter, well, they deserve it. They had it coming. Who wants a big suburban house? All that is true. But at the time that they were building those big suburban houses, especially in the Northwest suburbs where the Northwest Tollway was pulling jobs out of the city, it was an easy assumption that they would make some, if not a lot, of money. And now to be losing, in many cases, that's money they thought they'd retire on,
mm-hmm.
Or they would use to buy their downsize in the city, that sort of thing. And to see the truly the very large number of people, I don't want to estimate how many there are, who are in that position, who lose a lot of money on what might have been or might have been considered a solid investment, that's alarming.
That is a tragic outcome, especially if you're banking your retirement on that money you've invested in your home.
Yeah.
Okay, but let's talk about some good news.
I do cover some of that.
Yes,
yeah.
I did tease that there are seven neighborhoods with record home sales that you recorded and reported on in 2019.
Yeah, and I don't know that we can get to all of them, but they include Canaryville, which is the neighborhood immediately east of the historic Stockyards. They include Lakeview, where a house sold for over $4 million this year. Only the second ever in Lakeview. They include the West Loop, which has been just a remarkable boom town.
How much more can it grow?
Well, you know what I think it's going to do? It's going to keep going west.
Okay.
Almost anybody would see that those boundaries have been creeping west. There was a sale over $5 million in the West Loop, or there were actually two, and that was a record. There have been sales in Bronzeville that set a record, well over 600,000. And Bronzeville has been an amazing story in the last few years. Builders have been building and selling dozens of houses, new houses at $500,000 and up, filling in a lot of the gaps, the vacant lots in Bronzeville. Those are some of the places where record home prices were set in the past year.
So maybe if you are looking for a home, check out this list on Crane Chicago. These are neighborhoods to look at?
Yeah, I think those are some of the bright spots. I think one of the interesting things about Canaryville is it kind of came out of nowhere. I mean, there's been new construction there for quite a few years, and a lot of the pull there is spilling out of Chinatown through Bridgeport and then beyond, because Chinatown becomes expensive, Bridgeport becomes expensive. Where can I look next? Oh, I'll go to Canaryville. And there's a lot that will still be built because there are empty lots and also some, you know, decaying older homes that'll probably be replaced.
Wow. Okay. So you have a great story on a River Forest house that was made out of a longtime women's clubhouse. Explain this to me.
Well, unfortunately, this doesn't end well. This is not a happy story. But there's the River Forest Women's Club is this prairie school landmark, not in a legal sense. It didn't have landmark status. But the River Forest Women's Club had this beautiful brown building that it had built in River Forest, brown board and batten building it had built in 1913 with the architect William Drummond. He was professionally related to Frank Lloyd Wright and part of that whole prairie school explosion that Chicago really created. It's a women's club for a little over 80 years. And in the early 2000s, the women's club membership is dwindling. The park district starts supporting the maintenance needs of this building because, again, while not landmarked, it is a landmark. And then a man comes along who's lived in River Forest his whole life, wants to save it. The question is whether there was a threat of demolition. Some people said there was. Others said, oh, no, we'd never sell it to somebody who would demolish. Nevertheless, he and his wife turn this women's club into a single family home in 2004 and 2005. And they did this they preserved the auditorium, which was on the ground floor. A lot of the living space is below that in what you'd call a raised basement. They've kind of excavated the backyard so that you're not walking out basement steps, but nevertheless you're living below the main level, and some of the bedrooms, two of the bedrooms, are up above the auditorium, So you've got two bedrooms on one floor and two floors away are two others. A little bit awkward. Nevertheless, they did preserve this building and this auditorium. They did a green rehab on it. It's got solar powers. It's got geothermal heat. Put it on the market a little more than 7 years ago at about $1.6 million, and now it's in foreclosure. It didn't sell in the course of those 7 years. And on January 7th, it goes to court. The lender goes to court to try to force a court order, or try to get a court-ordered sale from the judge. This is really disappointing because this couple, you know, they thought we can make this really important piece of River Forest's
history,
architectural history, into something that has a long life ahead of it. Again, or a second chapter of a long life ahead of it. And the question now is, you know, when it gets resold at foreclosure, what exactly happens? Because clearly all the value that they thought was in the house, they told me at one point that they had as much as $2 million in it. They obviously have lost that.
Oh, but that's so tragic.
Yeah. So, and foreclosures, I mean, there could be a very positive end to this. It could be that the lender turns around and sells it for some incredibly low number, let's just say $400,000, to homeowners who can make that work, make the bedrooms separated from the bedrooms work, and turn that auditorium into a community meeting space or something. But the other possibility is that this thing lingers for a long time as a foreclosure that they can't find anybody for. So I'll be watching that. I mean, it's sad to see it go this way. Maybe there will be a happy ending coming.
Well, Dennis Rotkin of Crane Chicago, and I knew you're going to have a lot of predictions for 2020 as well. Where can everybody go to read your stories?
ChicagoBusiness.com.
Well, we just so appreciate you being here. You're a wealth of information. You always break it down to where anybody can understand it. Thank you, Dennis Rotkin. The news is next from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom.